And in practical Christianity, and in the unity way of worshiping and following and becoming the consciousness of Jesus Christ. And this morning we're going to begin a series of four lessons on the Ten Commandments. Only this morning I want to give you an understanding of these commandments in view of the great laws of prosperity that they teach, of how we can be prosperous, and how we can have the wealth of the ages flowing through each of us according to our desires and our needs. So I want you to open your mind and your heart and come now as we follow the footsteps of the Master and remember that he said, I've come that you might have life and have it abundantly. This morning I want to begin the series of lessons on the first two commandments of the Ten Commandments that Moses gave. And the first commandment, of course, is thou shalt have no other gods before me. We could paraphrase that and say, thou shalt look to no other source but God for my supply. Thou shalt look to no other source but God for my supply. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. I believe that each commandment is the embodiment of truth. Each of these ten commandments embodies an axiom of truth. Therefore, the form of understanding these commandments can be changed to meet any of our needs under all conditions when we see the germ of truth in each commandment. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. Now I know the old church has taught us to believe in duality. The devil and God. The good guy and the bad guy. The good power and the bad power. And we're sort of in a no man's land fighting it out. And whenever we do something we can't explain, we find out that it's blamed on the devil. And people have made fortunes saying the devil had made me do it, and I won't mention any names. But it's ridiculous. Even though someone can make a fortune saying that, it's not the best way in the world to make a life. Eventually we find that each one of us must accept the responsibility for our life and how to think about life. Now I'm not going to tell you what to think about. I'm not going to tell you how to act. That's up to you. But I am going to try and teach you how to think. And if you know how to think, then you will handle your individual circumstances and lessons in the right way. So we find that this first commandment, thou shalt have no other gods before me, this morning we're going to see it as far as prosperity, and we're going to say, thou shalt look to no other source but God for our supply. That means we acknowledge no other source but God as our supply. The shepherd boy who became one of the great kings of Israel, David, said, my soul wait thou in silence for God only, for my expectation is from him. This is an attitude of mine, couched in old English, but yet an attitude that all of us, my expectation is from him. Whom do I really see as the source of my life? We find out that many primitive people, maybe some even today, in their forms of worship, involved themselves, indulged in wild orgies, and dressed up in hideous costumes, and rattled drums and pans, and clapped things together, and shouted, and painted themselves up, because it attracted men, and they thought that they could also attract God's attention. So it became known that if you shouted, maybe God would hear you. And we still find people who feel if they can shout in a loud voice a prayer, that maybe that will help God hear them. There's another primitive idea that in some instances is still with us. It's the idea of buying favor with God, of making gifts or giving sacrifices. You know, God, here's $10. Now, what are you going to do for me? You know, this sort of thing. God, I gave $1 million to the building fund. Now, be reasonable and do this my way. You know, we have that in us. And sometimes we think that if we give, why then we're going to receive. But what it really means is that we have to learn how to give. And many of us have not learned how to give, much less learned how to receive. And we're going to find out about that in just a moment. We have to learn how to do these things and how to think about it. There are many people that are doing wonderful things for the wrong reason, and they come to results that are ridiculous. And they say, why did this happen to me after I've been so good and so wonderful? I suppose the Hebrews were the first people to introduce the idea of human conduct into gaining favor with God. And this is what we find in the literal meaning of the Ten Commandments, that if you act a certain way, if you're ethical, if you're kind, if you're good, you will please God, and then God will be good to you. The oldest book in the Bible, the book of Job, Job's friends come to him and they say, Job, we know you're a good man, but yet your wife deserted you, your children died, all your flocks, your camels, your horses, your cattle, your sheep have all died. They said, Job, you must be bad. You must have been doing something when we weren't looking, because this wouldn't have happened to you if you were good. You see, they equated being good with things happening. And we find the Puritans in our country in the beginning. You had to live a certain way. And if you lived a certain way, if you didn't play cards, or if you didn't dance, or if you didn't do this or whatever, then you would please God. Well, I don't know. God may be a dancer. I don't know. And God may love a wonderful game of canasta. I don't know. But we've certainly been going around in circles trying to say, now this pleases God, and there's another group over there. No, no, this pleases God. Because someday, if you, and to the degree that you suffer, and to the degree that you do without and want, you will be rewarded with a wonderful life in the life to come. And for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, this idea was very prevalent, until even today some Christians think it's good to suffer. They somehow feel if they're suffering, that they're becoming saints and self-righteous. And I don't believe that at all. I think there's something wrong with that. For instance, Job said, acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace. Thereby great good shall come unto thee, and thou shalt have plenty of silver. And of course, Job, his life started being better and becoming better when he stopped thinking of himself and started praying and doing something for other people. In the book of Deuteronomy, we read this promise, thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. Who says it's wrong to have what you have need of? I don't mean overabundance, that you could be a spoiled child. But I mean to have the things that you have need of. And in Psalms, we read, thou openest thy hand and satisfiest the desire of every living creature. These are beautiful things. And if that isn't enough, the Master said, fear not, little flock, for it is the good pleasure of the Father to give you the kingdom. How much more do we have to hear, to be convinced that good is ours? But we must develop the capacity to receive it. Somehow we idolize poverty. We think it's good to be poor. Our government should not make its decisions on what the poor are doing. Our government should make a decision on what's right. We sometimes think that poorness is self-righteousness. It is not. In a sense, and I don't want you to take this out of context, but in a sense, it's a sin to be poor. Because somehow you've put something, maybe your self-image, maybe you feel unworthy, but you've done something. Maybe you feel you haven't an education, or you don't have any well-placed friends, or you don't have any advantages. So you've put that mental block between you and the one source of all prosperity and ideas of prosperity, which is God. Therefore, you have blocked your prosperity. But therefore, that's a sin. Just like it's a sin to let anything come between you and the idea of perfect health, which is a God-given idea. That would be a sin. In a sense, it's a sin to be sick. Don't be ashamed of it. And it's a sin maybe to not have everything you need. Don't be ashamed of it, but begin to do something about it, and we'll find out what we can do about it. I suppose that the whole human race turned a gray corner when Jesus taught us, or tried to teach us, that God is spirit. Because by teaching us that God is an omnipresent creative power, God took us out of the idea that God is made in our image and somewhere far off in some geographical place watching us through a series of spies called angels and writing down every little transgression in a book that someday we're going to have read back to us when we get there. That's a very limiting thought and a very fearful thought and a very immature thought. We are punished not for our sins, we are punished by them. We are not punished for our mistakes, we are punished by our mistakes. No one has anything to do with the judgment of your life but you and the creation and the outworking of that life which you create out of your thinking and your acting and reacting. So there is no book. If there is, it's inside of you, and you are the judge, at least a part of you. Let's think a moment about an acorn. You know, an acorn has within it an oak tree. No, not really, but it has the potential of an oak tree. And yet if you were to take that acorn apart and look at the meal and the shell, there's very little evidence that that oak tree is in there. And yet the potential of it is there. However, the potential power is there. The power is there, and it remains static until the right conditions of moisture and heat and nourishment are provided. You and I have a tremendous potential in us. Sometimes it's not very evident by the shell or what you find inside. But if we create the right conditions, unbelievable things begin to develop within us and through us. As unbelievable as believing there is an oak tree in a little acorn. But the right conditions have to be created for that to come forth. And Christianity teaches us those right conditions, not by creeds and dogmas, but by teaching us how to think. The whole Bible is telling us this, from the Old Testament to the New Testament. And today, we're finding it out in the Old Testament. We can manifest supply, we can manifest our every need when we are open and receptive and clear. I believe this. I suppose that a lack of vision limits our prosperity. We mistakenly see our business or our employer or some stocks and bonds or some real estate income or whatever it might be, we see that as our source. And that is not our source, that is simply a channel through which the reality of our consciousness, which has created the ability to receive, receives. That's why you want to believe that there is what? But one presence and one power. You want to believe thou shalt look to no other source but God for your supply. Because your employer can get up and move away. Even if you're receiving your source from the government can go broke. Read history. Big companies can go bang just like little companies. But if your awareness and your realization that God is your source, even though something happens to the channel, the source must produce another channel for your good to supply you with what you have earned the right to receive. This all happens in consciousness, and it happens not only with money, it happens with love. When you believe that God is the source of love and happiness and joy, you may lose a loved one, but you will not lose the channel through which love will flow to you, because another channel will open up. You do not have to create love. You have to develop the capacity to receive it. You do not have to manipulate people. You have to develop the capacity within you to receive love, to receive kindness, to receive prosperity. And that comes through a realization that there is but one source. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. That's the commandment that Moses gave us. Jesus said the first commandment is to love the Lord thy God with all thy mind and heart and soul and strength. The second one is to love thy neighbor as thyself. But you see, you have to come to the oneness of life, God, to love with all my mind and heart and soul and strength. Now you may say that theoretically, but I don't know if emotionally you really believe it. It is when we see God, the reality of this universe, as our source, and that reality is within us. Many a man's prosperity is limited by the bondage in which he holds others. He feels that he is poor because people do not pay him what they owe him. Well, that's not true, because so somebody borrows $1 million and doesn't pay you back. If that $1 million is yours in consciousness, it will come to you. You'll be invited to some talk show and they'll ask you a fantastic question like, what's your name? And you'll answer it right and you'll win $1 million. That's the way life is. I'm not worried about what's going to happen out here. You have to keep yourself in order and aware. God never limits us. There is no limitation. The only limitation is on our ability to receive. We limit ourselves by filling our minds with fears and doubts and hates. All of these things limit us. So don't fear, don't doubt, don't build up great suspicions in your mind. Because in the process of doing this, you are believing in duality. You are believing in two powers rather than the one power, the true source, which is your supply of all good things. Walk down Broadway in downtown San Diego someday. Walk down Broadway and see if you really have an imagination. Can you walk down Broadway and imagine back about 1858 when Alonzo Horton came here and bought 300 acres for 27 cents an acre? Can you just visualize that? Can you see the land full of chaparral and sagebrush and rocks gently sloping down to the mud flats that nobody wanted? Can you visualize that? It's fantastic what is happening in the world. And it's happening through people that have vision, who had the 27 cents to buy an acre, who had the $10 million to buy an oceanfront lot. You have imagination. You have all of the ability that all the Alonzo Hortons of all the history of the world have, because you have the reality of God flowing through you. And you can see things and do things that anyone could see or do. If you want to think of yourself in that way, you certainly can. The imagination is a tremendous thing. And so we say, thou shalt not look to no other source but God for supply. Now that's the first commandment. The second commandment is, thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image. Thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image. Oh my, it goes on though. Thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image, nor any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down thyself unto them, nor serve them. Sounds awful, doesn't it? It really is. Because look what happens to us when we do this. For I, Jehovah, thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, upon the third and upon the fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing loving kindness unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments. It's enough to scare you to death when you read that. Of course, this thing visits our children to the second and third and fourth generations. How many of us are carrying false ideas in our lives that maybe our great-grandparents had passed on to them? How many believe that you must not get your feet wet or you'll catch pneumonia? How many believe that you'll die unless you soak cucumbers in vinegar overnight before you eat them? How many of you believe that other people can make you unhappy? How many of us believe that our good depends upon what others decide to give us? Those are the ideas that are passed down from one generation to another. I'm better than you are, we tell, and we're told. Or I'm not as good as certain other people. Those are the false ideas that are handed down from one generation to another generation to another generation. And this is what we want to overcome. And we can overcome this thing, because we can say, as we paraphrase that, thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image. We can say today and live it in our lives, thou shalt make no mental images of lack. Thou shalt make no mental images of lack. Hate is a lack of love. Fear is a lack of courage. Poverty is a lack of abundance. Make no mental images in your mind. If you do, you will bring upon yourself that which you are imaging in your mind. It can be no other way. It's the most fair, just, equitable way that life could possibly be made. In other words, you build your life, and so do I. You build your expectations. You build your capacity to receive. It doesn't matter if Jesus said, fear not, little flock. It is the Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. That's true, but you can only have as much of that kingdom as you develop the capacity and consciousness and awareness to receive. You may say, I'm lonely, there's no love in my life. There's all kinds of love in this world, but you may not have developed the capacity to receive love. So you say, nobody loves me. That's not true. And you must accept the responsibility for that. When you learn that, you begin to learn what life is all about. There are two wonderful characters in the New Testament. One is called the prodigal son, the other is called the elder brother. Probably there's something of us in one or the other of these two men. We know the prodigal son took what the father had. He was a rash young fellow. He took everything the father could give him, his inheritance, and he went out into the outer world to live. And he dissipated what he had. He made a lot of mistakes. And finally, he ended up feeding the swine. And that was a terrible thing for a Hebrew, to be left feeding the swine and eating the food with them. He finally came to himself and said, I'd rather go back and be a servant in my father's house. And he went back. And of course, his father represents God. And the prodigal represents each of us who think that we can turn away from the reality of our being and go out only according to appearance and live. We have to eventually wake up and come back. And most of us do that when something difficult happens to us. Now, the elder brother, he was home all the time. I always think of him as being a church person. Went to church every Sunday, sang in the choir, was an usher, hoed the weeds out in the yard, did all of this. Wouldn't miss it for the world, and it was wonderful. But when the prodigal son came home, the elder brother was out in the fields working. He came in, he wouldn't even go in the house. He just looked through the window, and he says, oh my goodness, there is that scoundrel. And they're having a party for him. My father's giving him new shoes, a robe, and a ring. Hey, Dad, come here. Explain this to me. Something's wrong. And the father comes out. He says, my son, what is it? And the elder brother says, what's the meaning of this? I've been with you all the time. I've worked hard. I've been here. And look, you've never given me a party like this. And the father said, but my son, this is your brother who was dead and who was found. He was lost and he's come home. And the elder brother says, well, what does that mean to me? I'll tell you what it means. It means that the elder brother had not developed the capacity to receive. He was there. He was in the kingdom. He was with his father. He lived in the house. All of that was available, but he had never developed the capacity to receive. Many of us are somewhere between these two men. Many of us have never developed the capacity to receive. Many of us have taken what we can get and go out and tried to live according to appearance. And we can see the wrongness of both extremes. Maybe there's a little of us in each of these characters from this parable. And we can see I need to develop the capacity to receive, and I need not so much to look at the appearance of life, but I need to draw nigh unto the reality that I call God within me. When we begin to do this, we begin to see what is really going on in our lives. We can begin to see, as the first commandment says, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And what does that mean? Thou shalt look to no other source but God for my supply. And the second great commandment is that Moses gave us, thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image. And so we turn that around and we paraphrase it and say, thou shalt make no mental images of lack. So let us not lack love, let us not lack courage, let us not lack joy. Let us not lack abundance. And as we live according to these two commandments, we will prepare ourselves for the next week when we can learn two more and we can begin to change our lives as we change. And we'll find what Jesus truly meant when he said, I've come that you might have abundance. And that abundance might be yours right now. So now let us pray. Let's give thanks that we've come to this hour, that we've heard these words. Let's give thanks that there is a spirit in man, and the breath of the Almighty giveth that spirit understanding. Let's give thanks that we have ears to hear and hearts to understand. And let's remember the words of the Master lastly. Blessed are you, if you abide in my words, for you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And for this we give thanks in the presence of the living Christ. Amen.